Body Ecology's detoxification training program. This is our third class, and today we're covering more of the seven body ecology principles and how they apply to detoxification. We're also going to cover foods, special products, and practices that help you in your detoxification program. It's with my pleasure that I welcome Donna Gates to today's class. Welcome, Donna.
Well, thank you, Heather. I'm glad to be here once again.
Great. Well, let's get started. I know that we've covered a couple of the seven principles already, but I was wondering if you could summarize the seven body ecology principles and talk a little bit further on how they apply to detoxification.
Well, this entire workshop is about the principle of cleansing. And I used to say years ago that it might be the most important principle, the principle of cleansing, because we have spiritual, emotional, and physical toxins in our body, and we've got to cleanse off these toxins, and this is the time to do that. I mentioned earlier that we have spiritual toxins. An example of that is as the whole human race, all of us together, the whole family of humans, have really been committing a lot of, you know, selfish acts against the earth and against the other animals on the planet. And so that's an example of creating negative karma or spiritual impurities for being so greedy and selfish and not thinking of, you know, of sharing this planet with the other animals of the planet. We have emotional toxins, and some of the later classes that we're going to be doing are going to start helping people deal with our emotional toxins. That's very important. Actually, the spiritual and emotional toxins are actually over the physical toxins. I mean, the body's like a puppet, and if you're holding a lot of negative emotional toxins, the body can't release its toxins effectively. So this is an important workshop, and it's why we decided to start with the principle of cleansing. What we've also covered a lot of information on step-by-step, because that principle tells us where to begin. When you're starting to cleanse, where do you begin? So we've covered that. We've talked about how it's important to never lose sight of cleansing. We're going to be cleansing the whole rest of our life, and we need to realize that our body will always be cleansing anyway, and there are certain seasons of the year where it naturally goes into a cleansing mode. So we've talked about that. The principle of uniqueness is important because every single one of us is very unique. It's like a snowstorm. If you have a big snowstorm, there isn't a single snowflake that's like any other snowflake. And so we're the same. And there's no way to say, this is what you need to be doing, this is what I need to be doing. I mean, each of us has to develop our own unique plan for cleansing these toxins out of our body. We have to also find out what the toxins are. That's great. There's a lot of information available and diagnostic tests available today that tell us, you know, what type of heavy metals we have in our body or what kind of preservatives and poisons are in our bloodstream and in our cells. So the principle of uniqueness just says that there's no such thing as a one-size-fits-all detox plan. We have to gather information about our bodies first, and then we can begin fixing the problem. You know, you have to ask yourself questions like, well, how is my liver? How is my gallbladder? Are there signs that my detoxification pathways are blocked? But the good news is all of this is fixable. The other principle that I think is very important to bring up in a detoxification workshop is the principle of acid alkaline. If the blood is mineral rich, it stays in balance. Now, this range of balance is very, very slight. And to be healthy, our blood needs to be slightly toward the alkaline side. So if we are under a lot of stress, it makes our blood slightly acidic, just ever so slightly acidic, but that little tiny little degree of acidity makes a big difference if we stay there all the time in that acidic range. Sugar also, anything that actually strips minerals or makes us burn minerals up is going to tip us into that slightly acid range. And so sugar, the toxins that we're taking in are making us slightly acidic, and that would be the endogenous toxins that we're making from inside our body and the exogenous toxins that are coming from the outside. If you're not sleeping well, you'll wake up, be very acidic. Actually, we tend to wake, most of us will wake up acidic in the morning anyway because we haven't been moving around and the toxins just tend to get stuck and everything slows down while we're sleeping and we're trying to repair ourselves. The body is trying to repair itself, but it's still natural to wake up slightly acidic. That's why when you test your, if you were to take urine paper and test your urine in the morning, you would see it would test slightly acidic usually. People who drink alcohol or people on that are using drugs, either medicinal or recreational drugs, are definitely tipping their body into that dangerous, constantly chronic acidic range. And when it tips into that slightly acidic range, we start having all kinds of problems. That's when our blood is perfect environment for pathogens to live, like yeast and viruses to live inside of us. That's when we're very prone to getting cancer. So eating an 80% plant-based, sugar-free, probiotic diet is key, and that's really what the Body Ecology Diet is. It's 80% plant-based. It's a sugar-free diet, and it's very rich in probiotic foods that bring in these wonderful microflora. These fermented foods actually dampen your desire for sugars, and the microflora help extract and assimilate and retain minerals so that we have mineral-rich blood. So there's many, many things these microflora do, but they're very critical in keeping this the right acid-alkaline balance in our body, in our blood. Remember, toxins do make us acidic, and when our blood is properly alkaline, then the cells can start to eliminate their toxins. So we have to have slightly alkaline blood in order for the cells to be able to dump their toxins. Now, as I kind of stressed over and over again, once they try to eliminate the toxins, you've got to make sure your detoxification pathways are open so that these toxins can leave the body. And this is where there's a big problem for most people. They're trying to go on detoxification programs and plans and go, you know, do things that are supposed to help them detoxify, like take milk thistle, for example, without having detoxification pathways that are open. Later on in a class that's coming, we're going to be talking about colon therapy because that's a very powerful tool for helping to get the digestive system moving efficiently.
So Donna, we understand the importance of acid alkaline, and one of the ones that comes up a lot is food combining. And I know in my own experience, food combining was one of the most important principles for my particular journey into healing my digestive system. What is food combining, and how does it help with detoxification?
Well, a lot of people feel like, have said over and over again to me, I don't think food combining is important, but it's very important because if you put foods together that digest very easily in the digestive tract, then well-digested food is not toxic. It's a nutrient. It's nutritious. But if you are putting a really complex meal together, like most people eat, a hamburger with a bun or cheese with tomato sauce and pizza and so on, these kind of foods are not digested in the digestive tract effectively, and they become poisonous. The proteins are not broken down and create certain kinds of toxins. The yeast in the digestive tract can feed off of there's actually fermentation that takes place, and the yeast can feed off of that. So absolutely, food combining helps with this whole issue of digestion, and so there are less endogenous toxins produced. Now, the principle of balance is really what we call the principle of expansion and contraction. This is the ancient principle of yin and yang that's used in Chinese medicine. And I want to get into Chinese medicine and compare it, give you a little bit of information about Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine and their insight into detoxification. But this principle of balance, if people could just sort of get into the habit of always asking the question, what is the front and what is the back of this new product that we've created. For example, let's take plastic. I don't know. I don't see plastic leaving our world quickly, because you'll notice if you look around, there's plastic is used in so many things and so many useful things. But we definitely have things being made out of plastic that we have too many things being made out of plastic. We've gone overboard in the plastic department. And when plastic was first discovered, if scientists at that time had said, okay, here's a big front, here's some good things about using plastic, but does it have a back? Is there a negative side to plastics? If our scientists asked these questions, we wouldn't be in the mess that we're in today. And a lot of us are very conscientious about trying to purchase products in biodegradable plastic, but there are many, many things that we can do to cut back on the amount of plastic being used. And we can certainly not purchase plastic items as much. Like I no longer have any plastic storage containers in my kitchen, for example, because I've replaced them all with glass jars and glass containers, and I feel so good about doing that. Everybody should be looking, realize that plastic has a front, but plastic has a back. And that's what the principle of balance is about. It's trying to keep a balance. We're going to continue to develop. Science is going to move on, and we're going to begin to develop new and wonderful things are coming, but we need to always ask that question, what is the front, what is the back? When antibiotics were developed, if we'd asked the question, well, is there a back to these antibiotics? They look like great things, they save lives, but is there a back to them? We might have discovered that they destroy the good bacteria, cause yeast infections and so on, weaken the immune system and so on. So that's what that principle is mostly about. Then we have two 80-20 principles, and one of them is about, again, it's a digestive principle. If you fill your stomach up all the way, 100%, you're just not going to digest well, and you're going to have those endotoxins, poor digestion. If you eat to where your stomach's about 80% full and you leave 20% for digestion, then you're going to digest that food more efficiently. So that's what that simple rule is about. And then the other part of 80-20 is when you prepare a plate for yourself, 80% of the food on that plate should be plant-based. Plant-based foods should make up 80% of our diet. And I'll say some more about that later on in the class today.
One of the things I wanted to ask is about the principle of 80-20. And you've talked about a plant-based diet being exceptional for detoxification. A lot of times people don't understand this idea of eating until your stomach is 80% full. Why is that going to help people in this process of detoxification?
Just simply because it's about efficient digestion. If you fill up your stomach and stuff yourself, which, by the way, people tend to do when they're not eating fermented foods. Fermented foods are so great at helping with digestion, and you are so, when you eat them, you're very well nourished, and so we don't want to constantly stuff ourselves and overeat. You're okay with pushing away from the table where you're slightly full, about 80% full. Then there's a little bit of room at the top of your stomach for digestive enzymes to come in and begin to work. It's difficult for the stomach to work when it's stuffed, basically. The stomach digests proteins and sends the food that we've eaten down into the small intestine, where more digestion takes place. And if there's poor digestion in the stomach because you overate, then what's being sent into the small intestine is toxic and poorly digested, and you have again created endotoxins, toxic substances inside the body. That's an example of an endogenous toxin.
Thank you, Donna. That's really helpful. Donna, one of the things that I love about body ecology is that you honor Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine. Can you talk about how we would apply Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine to detoxification?
Yes, well, ancient people knew that cleansing was important. This is not a new concept. It was a very well understood concept thousands of years ago. It's a very ancient principle. In Chinese medicine, they really understood the importance of focusing on the kidney and adrenals to build that whole meridian, which actually includes the bladder and the brain and the bones. And that was about increasing energy, which is what I spoke about early on. We've got to first and foremost create energy so that we have the energy to cleanse, to push out toxins. So the energy has to be restored. And in Chinese medicine, anything they did, whether it was acupuncture, shiatsu, the herbal tea blends that were made up for people, that they boiled and drank as teas, they were all about restoring energy first and foremost. But they used herbs to solve the problem all the time in their teas. They would blend very complex formulas together. And they always, in those herbal blends, they always made sure to put in some gentle herbs that kept the bowels moving so the toxins could come out. And so, again, you had that wisdom that we're talking about, increasing in solving the problem of not having enough energy, increasing energy, and at the same time, that means that more the toxins will come out, but you've got to have the detoxification pathways open. In Chinese medicine, they really understood this. They didn't believe in water therapy. In Chinese medicine, they didn't use enemas and colonics, for example. Well, colonics weren't around back in those days, but they didn't believe in water therapy. They actually used herbs. But in Ayurvedic medicine, they very much believed in and practiced, had a number of practices using water. For example, the neti pot, which many people can purchase today. You can go right into a health food store and buy a neti pot. And there's a lot of different styles. And what you do with the neti pot is you put water in them with a small amount of salt. It's about a cup of water with a half a teaspoon of this salt, and you cleanse the nasal passages. It's very easy to do, and it's an excellent thing to do, particularly if people are concerned about flus coming around. These are preventative things that can be done that are safe and very, very effective. I would vote for these way over getting a flu shot, for example. In Ayurvedic medicine, they cleanse the lungs as well, but it's interesting. They had a form of therapy that triggered vomiting, and they vomited to clean the lungs. And then there was sweating. They were really big on sweating. And, of course, we prefer for people to use saunas, or better yet, in my opinion, is the wonderful biomat. If people go to our website, we have a couple of articles on the biomat. And if they purchase the biomat through somebody mentioned in that article, the biomat people send biomats to our autistic children. So we're very, very grateful. I can promise you when the UPS driver shows up with a biomat to one of these families who do not have the money to help their children get well, the children adore their biomat. It warms them up. It helps them detoxify. And I am a real big believer in the biomat. It's a great way to get toxins out of the body, and it works on the principle of sweating mostly. But saunas are great, too. It's just that most of us don't have the space to put a big sauna in our home. Even the smallest biomat, the little one, I think it's about $5.50 or something, is adequate. The trunk of everybody's body fits on a biomat, and it does the job for you. You don't want to put your head. And ideally, really, the head should be kept cool when you're sweating. So you can't do that in a sauna, and you can do that in a biomat. Now, yes, sweating. But remember, we've got the summer time to sweat. And if we get out for an hour or two in the summertime and hike and bike and just make yourself sweat, I mean, it's not hard to do when it's really hot out. Sweating comes naturally particularly if you're healthy and your thyroid's not underactive, then you'll naturally sweat. And sweating is a great way to get the toxins out of the body. So you don't have to buy anything if you just get out in the summertime and let yourself sweat. And then in Ayurvedic medicine, they did clean the colon with water, and they called this method of cleansing Basti's, B-A-S-T-I. So people can go to the internet and do some searching and look more deeply into Ayurvedic medicine if they're interested, and look up Basti's. They definitely put a small amount of water into the colon to cleanse it, and it's very interesting. They didn't use much water, and their formulas often used oil in them, like sesame oil. So it's been around for a long, long time, this concept of putting water into the colon and cleansing the colon, stimulating the colon to release the material on the last part of the colon is where the material, the fecal material is stored before the body eliminates it. And then this type of the busties would trigger a release of that, of the stool, so a person's detoxification pathways were kept open. Of course, in Ayurvedic medicine, they too had wonderful herbs, and these herbs were antifungal, antiviral. These both of these systems are phenomenal to study. I think people should study them both if they can, but they're profound and they're deep, and actually today they're not as appropriate because we have changes in our body. We are more toxic. The toxins that an ancient practitioner dealt with was nothing like the toxins that are in our body today. So we really have to have more information, more tools than they needed back in ancient times. We use water in a lot of different ways to cleanse the physical body. We clean our teeth and our tongue 2 times a day, hopefully. People also do vaginal cleansing. For example, after making love, that's what douching is. And we can cleanse the colon with water, too. But what about cleansing with the colon with herbs? We get that question a lot. I know, Heather, that quite a few people asked about programs where, ropey type of material were eliminated. I want to say something about that. A lot of the herbs that are used in colon cleansing programs are very harsh. Senna is extremely harsh. Cascara sagrada is a little bit milder. Aloe can be milder than cascara. Rhubarb is milder. Yeah, but all of these are basically laxatives, and they do have a negative effect in the body. This is that principle of balance again. What is the positive? What is the negative side of these herbs? Well, they are harsh, and they do have a weakening, draining effect on the body. So, yes, they're okay to use if you are really constipated and you're on a trip, let's say, and you're feeling pretty miserable, then you go ahead and take something like that. But don't plan to use it long-term, just short-term to help regulate you for the moment. Now, magnesium is safer yet. There are products in the store like Calm. That's a safer choice for children to use. That's magnesium citrate, and it does stimulate the bowels to move. It's a little bit difficult to get just the right amount. Some people use too much and their stools get too loose, so you've got to find just the right amount to use for your body, again, the principle of uniqueness, and maybe you're better off having a small amount, say, very small amount, like a quarter of a teaspoon, 3 times a day, than taking a lot of at one time. Some people do take magnesium supplements like this at bedtime, though, because it helps them have a healthy stool in the morning, and that is safer than using these harsh laxatives. In Ayurvedic medicine, they always used Trifala, and it's very safe, and it's not habit-forming at all to use it for a long time. But for some people, it's not effective. So perhaps they might combine the two, put magnesium and Trifala together. Again, the principle of uniqueness is finding something that works for you. In Chinese medicine, they also had herbal formulas, and they were quite gentle. So if you can find some Chinese formulas that work for you, that's a great, that could be your best bet. And sometimes a common herb that you will find used in these Chinese herbal formulas was rhubarb, which, again, is a more gentle laxative. We have had a lot of questions about colon cleansing programs. There's a bunch of them out on the market today, and they promise that you'll get these long, ropey, mucoid material out of your colon. These types of programs are fine, too, but they're better used short-term, and they're really best safe for people that are hale and hearty. People who have a lot of excess, people who have been, eating and a lot of foods and they're overweight and they really have strong constitutions, they seem to be okay with these. But if you're in a gentle body, if you're already kind of fragile, it's not appropriate to do a cleansing like this. And if you do one, I think 10 days is plenty of time. And then if you want to do another one in 3 months or 6 months, but if you're at one time, 10 days is a very adequate amount of time to do one. they can leave you very depleted and very fatigued. Now, we talked a lot about the liver in the last class, and liver cleansing products are really a must. There are homeopathic liver cleansing products, liver drainage formulas, and they even have homeopathics that are drainage formulas for the kidneys as well, and many people do quite well doing a homeopathic. We have in our product line Livamend, which is a product that I formulated because I really wanted something strong and powerful that was real effective but real gentle. And it increases bile flow, and we have had years of wonderful testimonials from people. As a matter of fact, I'm rather shocked at the number of people that Livamend has helped. But it's pretty clear that if you use it, your liver is improving. You will see if you use 3 capsules 3 times a day, it will, after about a week, you'll start having healthier stools. We recommend taking Livamend with meals. That's the best time to take it. So it's actually quite easy to do that. If you take it, hopefully people are taking digestive enzymes with their meal, and they'd be taking 2 or 3 Livamend with the meal. And if somebody doesn't need a lot of liver cleansing, then just taking 2 a day may be adequate for them. We've had a lot of good reports from people's blood, for example, people's cholesterol levels dropping dramatically into the healthy range just from taking 2 a day. Now, a friend of mine, Lorene Cron, who has recently married and has now changed her name to Lorene Forbes, introduced me to some more interesting liver cleansing programs that I'd like to share. She is a specialist in essential oils, and one of the very effective cleansing programs that you can use for the liver using essential oils is to take a tablespoon of fresh lemon juice and put it in a little tiny shot glass, and then put in just 1 drop of lemon, the essential oil of lemon, and then 1 drop of peppermint, again, the essential oil of peppermint, and you drink that first thing in the morning on an empty stomach. And you do this for 28 days, then you take 7 days off and do another 28 days, and it's a very, very powerful cleansing program. We don't recommend people do this twice a day because they can go into a detox. Too much cleansing can occur. Lorene has a great little book on essential oils that she spent probably ages putting together, but I love to refer to this book because I love essential oils. And she's got a whole entire section just on the liver and liver cleansing. You can take the lemon juice and the drop of peppermint and the drop of lemon oils and put them in a hot tea too, if you want to do it that way. And you can make a tea out of it. But she also recommends using different oils right over the liver and then putting a warm compress on top of them. For example, you can put 4 drops of lemon on the liver area and let that absorb. 3 drops of lavender over the liver and let that absorb. And then 4 drops of geranium, same thing, over the liver area and let it absorb. Then you put a warm compress over the whole area and leave it on for about 10, 15 minutes, and do this for about 2 to 3 weeks. And this is a great, this speeds up liver detoxification as well.
Donna, I'm glad that you mentioned the essential oils, because Lorene Forbes has actually offered to do a free training class to teach people how to do liver detoxification with essential oils. And one of the things she's going to be teaching is it's the quality of the essential oils that's important, because most essential oils are not meant to be ingested, and most are also not meant to be put right on your skin. But there are some particular therapeutic-grade essential oils that you can do these things with. And so Lorene will be teaching the types of oils to use and how to use them.